Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Jason Sandina, Bell and Pollock here today for you. Our telephone number is 303-713-8255. 713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. We welcome again 94.1 FM KEZZ, Steamboat Springs, KRDO Colorado Springs, and all of the listeners in the state of Colorado. You can give us a call. We'll help you solve your problems, answer your questions. Don't forget about our new books. They're on our website, championsofthepeople.com. We've got a lot of stuff to cover today. We're going to be very busy. Last week, we said we were going to get into this gun question that Bones called in for and asked us several questions. We said we're going to do some research. We're going to get into that. And if we have enough time, and I hope we do, we're going to legally dissect and analyze for you. We're going to show you exactly how lawyers go at this situation in this Uber shooting in Michigan where the driver shot and killed, several people or one. But anyway, they committed an intentional act and alleged to committed murder. How would you analyze this? How would you dissect the situation? How would you go at it? Is the employer Uber responsible? Who's responsible? Does insurance cover it? We're going to tell you exactly how we do it. We're going to show you, and we're going to take you through an analysis. If somebody walked in our office right now, how we would approach this case. First of all, let's start talking about these guns questions that Bones asked last week. First of all, Jason, with regard to, you know, the federal law, the general rule, there's many exceptions, so we can't cover every exception on the show, but the general rule is that the federal law requires a background check, and then we're going to take it from there and get more specific, right?
That's correct. That sounds good, Gary.
Okay, so the Colorado state law is a statute, and a lot of the questions asked last week, can you have a trust to give a gun? What are the rules giving a gun? So we're going to cover that a little bit. So the new law in Colorado basically is before a person who is not a licensed gun dealer, if you're not a licensed gun dealer, before they transfer possession of a firearm, they must arrange for a licensed dealer to obtain a required background check. So that's pretty much tracks the federal law. They got to arrange to have a background check done. Now, the important part of the law are the exceptions where you don't have to do that. Some of these are pretty interesting, but let's talk about a will situation. Can you give your guns in your will without all these laws applying, without these background checks?
Now, in Colorado, one of the exceptions is that you can, as long as you know or have no reason to know that person can't legally possess the firearm. If they're a convicted felon or if there's another reason why they can't own that firearm and you know that, you still can't transfer that in a will.
Right. And so, you know, and also the question was asked last week, can you have a trust? Can you transfer your guns in trust? So let's talk a little law this morning. We're going to do law talk. There's basically two kinds of trusts with many, many other parameters from them. But you can do a trust while you're living, which is called an inter vivos trust. You can do a trust document right now. Or you can do a trust that comes into effect when you pass away, which is called a testamentary trust. So the exceptions in the Colorado statute say that you can basically transfer a gun in a trust created by a will, but it's silent, Jason. It's silent on whether or not you can have an inter vivos trust transfer of a gun, meaning inter vivos meaning while you're living. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So the rule is that to do a personal transfer, you need to do a background check unless it fits into one of these exceptions. Leaving a weapon in a will is one of the exceptions, but an inter vivos trust is not. So it defaults back to the rule that says that you need to do a background check by a licensed gun dealer.
Right. So the way you would legally analyze the statute is you got to do a background check. Do you fit into one of the exceptions? One of the exceptions is you can give your guns by a will. You can give it by a trust in a will. The trust will come into effect when you pass away. That's called a testamentary trust. And so can you do it right now? And the answer is there's nothing in the statute that lists it as an exception to transfer it while you're living, meaning inter vivos trust. There's nothing that says you can do that. and statutes are usually construed very strictly. And so the court would be looking at, well, that doesn't cover the exception. The exception doesn't say you can do it while you're living, and therefore I'm going to say that the statute says you have to have a background check. Obviously, there's many arguments both ways, but we're trying to get to some of these. The other one is you can transfer it to immediate family members, but what's the baseline requirement on that?
It's the same baseline. You can't give a gun to someone who can't legally possess a gun if you know that that person can't have a gun. But if they're in your immediate family, father, mother, wife, child, but not a brother-in-law, not a second cousin.
Right, and so one of the exceptions is a bona fide gift between immediate family members, so then you would not have to have a background check on that. And so there's many exceptions. We can't cover each one of them, but also there's one for people in the armed services. And if you can do it for there's temporary permission to do it if you have to take the gun to a shooting range. Interesting one for me is you can transfer possession to have it repaired. Isn't that fascinating? and that's even covered in the statute. So hope we're getting to some of these questions on these gun laws. It was a pretty fascinating week with regard to researching and analyzing the gun situation and what the statute means. Basic rule is you have to have a background check there unless you meet one of the exceptions, which we've said. One of the exceptions is bona fide immediate family member. But there's an overriding provision that says you really can't do these things if the transferor, the person that's giving the gun away, knows or reasonably should know that the person is ineligible to possess a firearm under state or federal law. And so you can't do it anyway. That's an overriding factor. If you have any questions, you can give us a call. Hopefully we've covered this gun situation. Right now we're going to talk law with Brian. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Thank you. My question is about a car driving into my house at 3 o'clock this morning. I have no idea what I need to do. They called the Thornton Police, but they didn't even give my specific house address. They just listed the location of the intersection where my house is located. So I didn't feel comfortable about that, and I don't know how I should proceed with the insurance company. And the insurance company that they had, she didn't have that card that's required by law to prove that she had proof of insurance, but somehow she had an insurance policy number that he wrote down, the policeman, but she didn't have that card that's required.
Wait a minute, so some car just ran into your house?
Yes.
Drove into your house this morning about 3 o'clock?
Yes.
And now there's some questions about insurance coverage. We're going to cover that with you. And the police came, right?
Yes, they did.
Okay, and anybody hurt?
No. Well, they said that the passenger in the car that hit the house had a bump on the head, and so they took him off to the hospital.
Any reason that you know of why or how this car ran into your house? Intoxicated?
They had to hit the gas instead of the brake.
Yeah, but intoxicated, impaired, do you know?
No, I couldn't get that information out of the policeman.
Brian, hang on. We got a break coming up, and we're going to get you on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere, okay?
Thank you.
You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Jason Sandine of Bell and Pollock, we're here for you. Our telephone number is 303-713-8255. In the Mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. And at any time, anywhere, championsofthepeople.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I'm Gary Bell, along with Jason Sandine of our firm, Bell and Pollock. We're here for you. 303-713-8255. If you want a copy of any of our books, you just call Kevin right here in the studio. We'll send them to you, hard copy. The first book, Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, Once in the Accident and Again on the Insurance Claim. Another book, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. and it has very, very important information about insurance coverage for you with step-by-step procedures. Or you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can download any of the ebooks. We also got a very definitive guide on workers' compensation injuries. We're glad to do it, and you can have them for free. You can either call us or go to our website. Right before the break, we were talking to Brian. A car crashed into his house this morning at 3 o'clock in the morning. And, Brian, you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so did they arrest this woman? Did they give her a blood alcohol test, anything like that?
They wouldn't tell me. They what they did was they kept saying, well, we've got to another accident to go to, so we had to leave. So they weren't helpful in terms of answering my questions, which upset me, but I couldn't hold them back. So I'm really frustrated over this because I know that what happened was when I'm at the end of a cul-de-sac, they didn't stop at the cul-de-sac. They instead accelerated and ran up into my yard, which is uphill, and through my tam evergreen bushes and into the house. So they were really accelerating. Not only did they refuse to stop at the sign, but they accelerated.
Wow. Okay, so, I mean, let's discuss liability. Let's see if we can help Brian, Jason.
Okay.
Well, the driver's going to be responsible.
The driver's at fault. Yeah. She drove, you know, over the curb, over the street, through the bushes, into your house. That's, you know, 3 in the morning. I would, my best guess is that she was intoxicated or maybe some sort of medical emergency is the only two things, how I could see she did that.
Right, but Brian, you're entitled to the police report, maybe not immediately, but you can get it. Let's talk about insurance coverages. So her car insurance policy is going to cover your damages. However, there might be a limit on the amount.
Yeah, you know, there's up to the policy limits, and you said earlier, I believe before the break, that she didn't have proof of insurance, or she had a policy number, or it may have expired.
Yes, she didn't have proof of insurance with her. The policeman wrote down her policy number.
So okay,
she had some kind of a number.
All right, Brian, what has to happen is you've got to call, and we'll help you if you want us to, but you got to call the insurance company, her car insurance company, make a claim for your property damage, and they might say, okay, we'll accept the claim or not, and then there's going to be a fight, but they're probably going to accept the claim, and then it's going to be covered by her limit of her insurance coverages. She's still personally responsible over and above her insurance coverage, but usually the people don't have the money to do that. So you got to make a claim with her car insurance company, number one. She's definitely responsible. And you also need to contact your homeowner's insurance in case she doesn't have enough insurance. What don't you think, Jason?
Absolutely. I would contact your homeowner's insurance regardless. Let them know what's going on. Your homeowner's insurance will help with the auto insurance and make sure that gets taken care of.
But this is a prime example, Brian, where you call your homeowner's insurance and they say, well, that's an exception. We don't cover that. We might cover wind damage or hail damage. You know, and it was that old fight down when we had the hurricane down in Louisiana, except Mississippi, years ago, where they said, well, we're not going to pay for your house because it's water damage, not wind damage, and it's not covered, or the reverse. It was wind damage, not water damage, or it's water damage, not wind damage. And so they're going to look for an exclusion. That was a famous case where Trent Lott filed a lawsuit against State Farm. But so they're gonna look for an exclusion to not pay you. And right. Definitely she's primary, so that has to be investigated. But are we making sense to you here?
Yes, I am. Yeah, you certainly are. I'm getting it. And so I'll get a copy of the form, whatever you call that, report. I'll do that. But my other question was, when I file the claim with my insurance, I have Amica, is that going to raise my premiums in the future if I file a claim with my home insurance?
Well, probably not, but underscore the word probably, because you make a claim or you make a number of claims and they do raise your premiums, but probably not, and that's my best answer. I guess it's up to that insurance company, but you don't have much choice. You got to make the claim. Also, yeah. I want you to understand that depending on the language of your policy, and this one might be going out on a limb, but would have to be investigated. Do you have a car?
Yes.
Okay, maybe your own car insurance would apply, because when you're hit by as a pedestrian by a car, your own car insurance applies. So those have to be investigated. Those have to be claimed against. You need to get a copy of the police report. And we'll be glad to help you, Brian, because this is a kind of a complicated, there's complicated permutations of what you got to do.
Okay, that was good. Let me write down your phone number one more time.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll just put you on hold, give Kevin your information. We're going to give you a call this week, and we'll help you, okay?
Okay.
Don't go anywhere. I'm going to put you on hold, all right?
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Brian.
Thank you.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Jason Sandeen. If we have enough time today, we're going to get to the analysis of this Uber shooting in Michigan. How do you do it? How do lawyers look at it? How do lawyers go after it? And who's responsible and why, and who's not responsible and why? We're going to talk law with Mike right now from Longmont. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Good morning. I just tuned in. I don't know if you covered any of this yet or not. Now, I was a pedestrian. I got hit in a crosswalk by a car. Turns out it's a rental car.
Right.
And now I don't own a vehicle, so I don't have MedPay. I don't have insurance to, you know, go after my own insurance. And my question is, if she personally doesn't have a very high limit on her insurance, can I also go after the rental car company?
Okay, great question. So, Jason, let's analyze this like you were sitting in our office. We're going to go after. First, we're going to figure out liability and why. He's in a crosswalk.
I assume the police came?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and did they write the other driver a ticket? Do you know?
She got a reckless driving.
Reckless driving. Okay. So, have you gotten a copy of the police report yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
That just happened 2 days ago.
So, the first thing we'd want to do is get a copy of the police report. That would have the information on there. It would have the person who hit you, their personal insurance, and then also the rental car insurance would be on there. We'd want to check for that.
Right, and so and further analysis is were you were in a painted crosswalk or was it not painted?
Whole painted major intersection.
Major intersection.
And everything.
And did you have a walk light and that sort of thing?
Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, so
she was on her cell phone and wasn't paying any attention.
Really?
Yeah.
And we just did a show about cell phones and cognition yesterday, but that's going to air tomorrow morning. But bottom line is, you got to analyze whether or not they're liable and responsible. And you might be listening to the show right now and think, well, that's ridiculous. The car hit the pedestrian. But that's not always ridiculous because, and we cover this in our book called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. It's even though there was no hit and run, it's still the insurance part of that book still applies. And we're going to send you a copy of that before we're done. But, Mike, if you're in a painted crosswalk and you've got a walk light, okay, then the pedestrian has the rights. But I want everybody to understand this. It's in our book, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. It's in our book. If you're jaywalking or you're not in a crosswalk, then the pedestrian many times has to yield to the car. The pedestrian doesn't always win. So when lawyers figure out liability, meaning who's responsible and why, who's not responsible and why, on a crosswalk case, you've got to analyze the crosswalk. And if there's no painted crosswalk, then the law covers under the statutes what we call an implied crosswalk. But we won't go there today because you've got a painted crosswalk. So definitely she's responsible and liable to you. Now, let's talk about the insurance, Jason, because her own personal car insurance would apply probably, and also she might have rental car insurance as well.
Yeah.
If she didn't sign up for the rental car insurance, in any event, is there any liability on the part of the rental car company as the owner of the car?
Okay, well, so independent liability, that's questionable, and that's like that Uber case we're going to discuss later in the show. But these rental car companies have insurance, and if she opts in and pays the premium for the insurance when she rents the car, then the insurance for the rental car company applies, and that's different than the rental car company being independently liable, but the insurance is there, plus her own personal car insurance also applies, right?
That's correct. Yeah, her own insurance will apply, plus whether she opted in to get the rental car insurance. Now, if she was working for a company, let's say she's on business and the company rented her the car, then that her company could be liable as well.
Exactly. So there's potentially more than one source to recover from. Were you injured? What happened to you, Mike?
Oh my God! Yeah, I did. She hit me. She made a left-hand turn.
Right.
I was going one way. She was coming the opposite way, made a left-hand turn, caught me about knee-high. I did a somersault across the top of her car, ended up in the street. I'm really banged up to think I've got rotator cuff injuries, knee injuries, back injuries.
Did you go to the emergency room?
Oh, yes, sir.
I hope. Okay. And when did this happen, Mike?
2 days ago.
2 days ago. all right, we're going to give you some help on this situation because, yes, there's insurance coverages. Yes, you need to get to the bottom line on those texting records or cell phone records, and we just covered that yesterday. Brad and I did in the show that's going to air tomorrow morning at 7:30 in the mornings. In the morning, it's going to air in some mountain towns as well. So we just covered that. But yes, there's insurance. Yes, you need to do the right things. Yes, you need a legal game plan. Yes, she's responsible and liable, and we're going to help you. How's that?
Oh, thank you guys very, very much.
Okay, so Mike, what I'm going to do is put you on hold. Give Kevin your information, okay? We'll give you a call, and we'll walk you right through this and tell you exactly what you need to do step by step. But you're doing the right thing, getting early information.
Thank you very much.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Please hold. And Kevin will take down your information. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Jason Sandeen. Earlier we talked about the gun laws and the gun questions that Bones asked us about last week. Also, if we have time, and I hope we do, we're going to get to the Uber shooting and who's responsible and why and who's not responsible and why. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I guarantee you this is the only show of its kind. We'll be right back. Legal Show. Gary Bell, Jason Sandeen of Bell and Pollock here to help you. 303-713-8255. And, you know, I want to tell you something. Don't forget the show that follows ours. It's the Consumer Real Estate Show. Barry and Larry, I worked with these gentlemen. You know, as consumers, you want to know where to go. You want to know the right place. You want a safe haven. We all do as consumers. I'm working with these people right now. I can tell you they're great. They know what they're doing. They're knowledgeable. They're doing their own radio shows. It's the Consumer Real Estate Show, Barry and Larry. So right now we're going to have Eric join us from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric. What's cooking?
Good morning. How are you today?
Good.
Good. Let me run some specials by you guys for the week. Our breakfast special is going to be the breakfast quesadilla. That's going to come on 2 6-inch flour tortillas. We're going to load that up with scrambled eggs, shredded cheese, your choice of ham, bacon, or sausage. That comes with lettuce, tomato, guac, and sour on the side. And our lunch special is going to be a pork chorizo burrito. We can smother that in our scratch-made red or green chili that comes with beans and rice, lettuce, tomato, guac, and sour as well. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all you can eat. It's all you can eat taco and burrito buffet. It's only $7.99. It's all you can eat. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. And don't forget as well, we have mimosas, bottomless mimosas for only $10. It's going to be 73 degrees today. The deck is open. The umbrellas are out. Ready to come on down to Caitlin's, have a good time, so make sure you come on down and try to get to see us.
Scratch-made red and green chili. Is that what you said?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
I love it. I've had it before,
our green chili doesn't have any pork in it. Traditionally, green chili will have pork in it. We don't have it, so that appeases a lot of people. Come on down and check us out.
Where are you located?
4379 East Mississippi Avenue. That's one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Gracias and hasta la vista.
You got it. Thank you.
Okay. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Jason Sandeen. We're here for you. Answer your questions, solve your problems on any subject. 303-713-8255. You know the drill. We've been doing this for years. Give us a call. We'll be glad to help you. This is a law talk show. We're talking law with Steve right now. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Good morning. Thank you for your show. I guess I have a question and comment regarding crosswalks. First would be is I live down near Castle Rock and what I'll call South Castle Rock, the old part of town.
Right.
They put these signs up all over the place. The obvious, you know, yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk. They do it up in Boulder, too. But here's what I've noticed. It seems on the pedestrian point of view that those signs are being interpreted that the pedestrian has every right to cross against the light. I see it all the time. People will walk out when the oncoming traffic has a green light. They'll just walk out. And creating dangerous situations. The traffic is, you know, flowing at whatever the speed limit might be. They just walk right off the curb into the crosswalk and expect the cars to stop. I mean, I never heard that in your conversation. I feel for the gentleman that got hit, but no point in the conversation was it asked, you know, did you cross against the light?
Great comment, Steve. Incredible comment, and it's so true. And the analysis, legal analysis, involves in Colorado a comparative negligence statute. So I'm going to get to the rest of part of your comment in a second. But Jason, let's cover what comparative negligence means basically, and then we'll get the rest of your comment, Steve.
Yeah. Well, you're always going to look at comparative negligence. If it's sometimes. Both people are at fault. The person shouldn't have been walking there, but the driver should have been paying attention. You look at it, it's a balancing test. If you think of it on a scale from 1% to 100%, who's at fault? If it's more than 50%, you're at fault. You're not going to be able to recover anything because of comparative negligence.
Right. So the bottom line is, Steve, we got a comparative negligence statute which modifies the old common law that we inherited from England, which means, as Jason just said, the pedestrians may be negligent. They may be partially negligent. So let's use an example so everybody understands. Maybe the pedestrian, and this would all be determined by the trial and the ultimate fact finder, which is the jury, but let's say the pedestrian did exactly what you said. They may be found to be 20% responsible. And then the driver's 80% responsible, and that's how you compare it. So what does that mean legally? Let's just make up a stupid example here so the math is easy. Let's say that the person recovered $100. That's ridiculous, but let's just use it. $100, and they were 20% negligent. Then 20% of $100 would be subtracted, $20, and they would be awarded $80 instead of the full $100 because they participated in their own negligence. Are we making that part clear, Steve?
Yes.
Okay, so they're not absolutely free, but then there's the law about the crosswalks, and I've heard people in California complain about this a lot, that the pedestrians just walk across regardless. And so there's case law in Colorado that deals with dart out cases, pedestrians darting out in front of traffic, and so that's covered. So they're not totally absolved. Bottom line is everybody should pay attention. Bottom line is pedestrians are protected in a crosswalk, but that doesn't absolve them of their own part of their own accountability and responsibility. Okay?
Thank you.
I don't know if we answered. Are we answering your questions?
No, you did a fantastic job. I think my final comment would be is that my observation has been is that before these signs were all put up, everybody sort of knew, and self-preservation would probably take over and say, I better not walk out in there. But now what I see over the last couple of years since those signs have been put up, it seems that the pedestrians are interpreting it. And even from some interactions that I have seen with pedestrians who do walk just right off the curb against the light, they're out, you know, a third of the way into the lane.
Right.
The car, you know, has to slam on its brakes. And then the pedestrian will give some sort of gesture or comment, you know, pointing to the sign. And it's like they were totally in the wrong. And I think these cities that are putting these signs up, you know, I think they might be partly at fault, too, because it's giving the pedestrian public this idea that they have carte blanche to walk out into the, you know, the crosswalk anytime they want.
Right. And your call is so well taken because I now see them in Steamboat Springs. I'm up there a lot. Steamboat Springs, I go down roads that I don't even see a crosswalk, and then it says you must yield to pedestrians. Your comments will take and tell you what I'm going to do, Steve.
Thanks.
I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to send you a free copy of our book, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run, and there's a whole section in there on crosswalks, and if you don't mind, we'll be glad to do that.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So thanks for the call. I'm going to put you on hold. Don't go anywhere, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. We appreciate all your calls. Right now, we appreciate Rodeo Doc. Good morning, Rodeo Doc.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good. ¿Qué está pasando? What's happening?
Yummy boy, Colorado Springs.
Rock and roll.
Yes, indeed.
What's up?
I'm down here teaching folks how to do soft tissue treatment, but I had a new patient yesterday. Interesting story, and I need some help here. The statute of limitations on filing a case is 3 years or 1 year?
It's a car case?
Yes.
3 years on a car case.
Right.
Okay. So I got her the right information there. She's been in two car crashes in less than a year. And the first one was American Family, and they bullied her into a settlement. She wasn't represented. And she settled with the at-fault people. She also has MedPay. Is that still something you can access, even though she settled with the at-fault?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Okay.
I mean, it probably should have been coordinated with them, and there may be a clause in the... I mean, the bottom line answer is what does the insurance policy language say
sure.
about that? But my general answer to you is, yes, she can still avail herself of MedPay. MedPay kind of replaced the old PIP, meaning personal injury protection statute, which
right.
means they'll pay regardless of fault. And I know yeah. she wasn't at fault, but still.
Well, and that I just wasn't sure on that, and I told her I would check. And this is one of those instances where everybody listening needs to have MedPay.
The highest they can afford. Go ahead.
Yes, the highest they can afford. And everyone in an accident that causes any kind of change in their mentation, their thinking, their processing, needs to be checked out. Recent literature says that these kind of folks are at greater risk for developing dementia than folks who've never had any head trauma. So there's plenty of good reason to get representation and more than enough reason to have your MedPay in place.
It's obvious you speak from years of experience and wisdom, Rodeo Doc, but I gotta tell you that then she had a pre-existing condition. The insurance company, as you know, is going to say, well, she was injured in the previous accident, so this accident could not have caused anything. But I want you to know that under the McLaughlin case in Colorado, Colorado Supreme Court case held that if she had a previous accident, and if she became symptom-free for a substantial period of time, undefined, then a different law applies to her as if she had symptoms all along from the previous accident. So, one more time. If she had the previous accident and her symptoms from that previous accident continued right up to this accident, a little bit different law would apply. If she had a previous accident and she had symptoms that went away from the previous accident and she was symptom-free for a substantial period of time and then had this accident, a different law applies under the McLaughlin case.
Yeah, and we're going to be dealing with that, unfortunately. The symptoms continued because the mild traumatic brain injury wasn't dealt with.
Wow. So, but I know you know about it, but you need to pay attention to those things. But there's still a way. Don't. She shouldn't give up. There's still a way. And with you treating her, I know you'll get to the bottom of it.
Well, we're certainly going to do that. Do you guys have someone down here that you work with, or do you come down here and talk to patients? Or yeah, I know she's not going to go to Denver.
Oh no, we go everywhere. We go all over the state of Colorado. We if she ever wanted to, would be glad to go down to her. We go to you okay. if you want us to. So no problem.
Terrific. Appreciate you guys' help. You have a blessed weekend.
Rodeo Doc, it's glad to hear your voice again, buddy.
All right. Take
all right.
Care.
Thank you. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell. Jason Sandina, Bell and Pollock. It doesn't get any better than this. Pull up your legal chair, get your legal coffee, your legal bagel. We're talking law. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Jason Sandina, Bell and Pollock here for you, 303-713-8255. Okay, we're going to talk about this Uber incident in Michigan a little bit. So if the people came in, or let's just go through this case, how lawyers would do this. First, we're going to look at liability, who's responsible, and we start with the driver.
Start with the driver. Yeah, the driver obviously committed the actions. He's at fault for this. What he did was basically commit a murder, civil battery, assault. There's a lot of ways to look at that and how to pin that on the driver.
Yeah, and if you're going to be an attorney in this situation, you got to be very careful when you're analyzing this. Because why? Because let's look at the insurance situation. If it's murder, then insurance companies say we don't cover intentional torts, which intentional acts. Therefore, We're not going to cover this. That's what they're going to say. So, but the killer, I mean, the shooter is still responsible for his or her own acts. So I want to ask everybody, what is your expectation? What is your expectation when you contact Uber and you get in that car?
I use Uber. I want a safe, reliable, clean ride that'll get me to where I'm going quickly.
Operative word was safe.
Safe.
In that sentence. So is Uber responsible here? And so let's look at this. There's no statute in Michigan, no statute covering. So lawyers would look at who's liable. So is Uber liable? Well, is there a statute? First thing we go after is a statute. Is there a statute that covers the situation? There's no statute in Michigan. So that's not the end of the story. Let's talk about where do we go and default to next is a common law.
Sure. You look to the common law. That's judge-made law. That's case law. Uber's going to say what happened was a terrible tragedy, but we had no way of knowing this. We couldn't have predicted it. This is this driver's actions. He was acting independently.
Right. So can employers, and Uber says they're not an employer, that all these drivers are independent contractors, so they don't have to pay FICA, and they don't want to be responsible for them, but they hire them and make money off of them. So there's a big fight on whether or not they're really, truly employees or independent contractors, but that affects the legal liability. But our employers, let's just call them an employer for a second, are employers liable and responsible for the intentional, tortious acts of their employees, i.e. drivers? Are they? Well, there's some cases that say yes. This is how we'd analyze this case. You'd go through and say, yes, well, what does the case law hold? So no statute, so we're going to default to the common law. What's the common law? As Jason just said, it's the case-made law we inherited from England. This is how this works. So then what's the common law and the case law say? Well, there's cases on negligent hiring, negligent retention, negligent entrustment. Oh, wait a minute. We're Uber. We don't want to be held responsible. There's no statute. Well, there's not, but there is the common law. And so let's talk about negligent hiring for a second, because if Uber says we don't have any duty to anybody to do anything, we don't have to an independent duty, we don't have a responsibility to do this, and so how would that be attacked, Jason?
Well, no. Everyone has a duty to hire, supervise, and retain competent employees, people that can perform their job. And if they have knowledge that this person is dangerous and that they put their customers at risk, then they're going to be held responsible if the employer breached that duty to hire someone who they know is going to be safe and effective at their job.
Okay, but Uber says, and we're analyzing this case just like we would do in the office, just like attorneys do. Uber's going to say, what are they going to say? They're going to say we're not responsible. They're an independent contractor. We have no duty to do a background check. We don't know who these people are. We don't care who they are. They're not our employees. We don't pay FICA. We're not going to do that. And so, how are they going to be held responsible? Well, you know, you go to the case law. One of the seminal cases in Colorado's Cooley versus Eskridge years ago decided, is an employer responsible or liable? So look at it this way. In this case, the Cooley case discussed this. Look at it this way. Is this person that's going to be charged, the company's going to be charged as the driver, or is this function one that would be cause that person, the driver, to come in contact with a lot of people in the public, right?
Yes.
I mean, absolutely it would. So some of the cases are, well, how can a maintenance man, example, at a condo association be responsible, cause their employer to be responsible for, let's say, a sexual assault or breaking and entering? Well, the case law said that person's not going to be necessarily involved too much with the general public, so the background checked and the duty of the employer is less, mm-hmm. is not so high, is not so great, like in that example. But you change it where the person's going to have like a manager of apartment complex where they're going to have keys and access, then the duty for background checks and hiring responsibilities is higher, right?
Absolutely. And you're going to want to know what did Uber know and what should they have known? In a situation in an Uber, a lot of times you're in there one-on-one. The driver and you in the car, they're driving the car. They have all the power. They can drive that car wherever they want to go. It's actually you are really trusting Uber to do a background check on their employees, so they are held to a higher standard of care than, say, someone who's hired to work in a factory or something like
that. Right. There's another case in Colorado called Moses versus the Diocese of Colorado. And the court clearly held this issue we're talking about. What's the responsibility of the employer? We're calling Uber an employer. They deny it. What's the responsibility of the employer to do a background check? And they say when the requisite degree of care increases, this duty increases, this duty becomes stronger, it becomes higher once the employer knows that the employee, i.e. the driver, is going to come in frequent contact with the public. Well, hello.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you're going to get in their car. That's frequent contact all the time. Right. And so I want to make one more comment on this Uber situation on the insurance. Colorado, I think, is one of two states in the country right now that has a specific statute on Uber and about insurance. So when you get on the app and you get on the Uber app and you're wanting a ride, and during that period of time right there when you're on the app, a different level of insurance kicks in by the statute. And then, Jason, when the driver accepts it, on the app and says, "Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to come over and pick you up." What happens then on insurance?
Then the Uber insurance, the commercial policy, kicks in from the moment that the driver accepts your ride. To they pick you up and they take you to your destination until you get out of that Uber, there is a higher level of insurance.
And that's by Colorado statute. And then the final analysis and our quick analysis in the Michigan thing, well, yes, the Uber could be held liable under the doctrine of negligent hiring, negligent entrustment. What's the damages? Well, for wrongful death, it's a murder, wrongful death. Then the damages, you have to go to the statute or the common law. The statute in Colorado limits, caps the wrongful death damages, and therefore that's how you would analyze the case. Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. We're here for you. Get any of our books for free. Our first book, Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, once in the accident and again on the insurance claim. Our second book, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. Our third book, the premier guideline and guide for workers' compensation injury.